हरि
हरि
बोल
बोल
काव्य,
काव्य,
क्या
हरे कृष्ण महाराज।
हाल है?
धन्यवाद
नमस्कार।
स्वरूप,
सर
धन्यवाद महाराज।
अगेन टुडे वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम द सब्जेक्ट ऑफ एवोल्यूशन। हियर इज द लिंक इफ यू डोंट हैव दैट डाउनलोडेड। वी आर ऑन पेज 29। Page 28, at the bottom of page 28, we'll start from there. Dr. Murphy. Dr. Murphy is now, I think he's Rishikesh Swami. There is a Dr. Murphy, and he became now Rishikesh Swami. Dr. Murphy says, so externally we see the Ganges as water, but in reality she is a person. And Sri Damodara says, yes, everything is a person. Before we go to the material conception, we must pass through the personal conception or aspect of that thing. In Vrindavan, everything is conscious, but some things are posing in a passive way. But they are all conscious. The Yamuna River, the cows, the trees, the fruit, everything is conscious, spiritual. They pose in different ways. Being able to detect the conscious characteristic in everything, the Aryans saw all of nature as conscious and personal and addressed everything as consciousness, as conscious. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namne Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pucharane Nivishesha Shunyavati Vashchachade Satarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Asarke Om Agyanati Mirandasya Yananjana Salakaya चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितां येन भूतले वयं रूपा कथामायं दधाति स्वापनन्तिकम् पञ्चकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पापभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे अक्षय प्रभु वांट्स टू जॉइन कैन यू हियर हिम
यस महाराज आई कॉल्ड हिम एंड आई डिड वांट टू
हियर हिम वांट्स टू ऐड Dhanavas. We are on page 29, reading from the subjective evolution. Do you have that link?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, page 29. And it says, consciousness and personality are the universal basis of reality. So this is our Vaishnava conception. Consciousness and personality. Wherever there is consciousness, there is personality. So consciousness and personality are the basis of reality. We don't accept matter as the basis of reality. We accept consciousness as the basis. Whatever we may experience is conscious. There can't be any experience without consciousness. The reflection of a material object is within me, and the plane within me is conscious. The subject is consciousness, and whatever kind of thing the object may be, it casts its reflection into the plane of consciousness. The observer of any objective reality is involved only with consciousness from beginning to end and can have no conception of matter apart from consciousness. So that should be obvious. Whatever people don't realize, they are saying that matter is that the reality is atoms and molecules. It is carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, all these things. But who was saying that? The contribution from the scientists is not considered. Only what they say is considered. The fact that they say it, that they think it, that is not considered. If I say I think the air is I think this the sun is black. My thinking that doesn't make it black. But they are saying the sun is light, it's bright. Honey, is it on the basis of their thinking that is bright? They have to think that is bright before it can become bright. Otherwise, whether the sun is black or bright, we can't say. Only what we experience. And the experience is coming from the consciousness. What the sun actually is, we don't know. We only know what we can observe. So, for instance, if someone can only see ultraviolet light, let's say, or x-rays, somebody can see x-rays. We can't see x-rays, we can't see the ultraviolet, but we can only see the visible spectrum of light. So from our point of view, only things which are in the visible spectrum we can see. But people who can see from the ultraviolet or the x-ray vision, they may see something totally different. They may see what we're calling the universe, they may see it to be something totally different because their vision is of a different wavelength than ours. So they won't see the sun in the same way we do. Then what is the sun? They are seeing something, but we are seeing another thing. Like that. And those who can't see, they won't even know that their sun is there. So everything, and then their whole conception will be based on what they can experience. And seeing is not part of their experience, then how will they interpret the universe? You see? So everything is depending upon the type of consciousness, the conditioning of consciousness that we have, that we will be able to say that the world is like this, the world is like that. The world means the sphere of experience. The sphere that consciousness is experiencing, that is called the world. But the problem with the scientists is they are only thinking in terms of the object and not of the contribution from the subject. So we have titled our newsletter Science and Scientist. They left out the most important ingredient, the scientist, in their description of science. Then Dr. Murphy says, how can we differentiate consciousness from mind? This was the question Akshay Prabhu was asking last time. What is the difference between consciousness and mind? Srila Maharaj says in Bhagavad Gita, the path of differentiation between consciousness and mind is suggested. Indriyani paranyahur. What is Atma? The soul, the spiritual conception. We have come to the world conception by a particular process. By the process of elimination, we can trace out what the mind is. It is said that the basis of mind is acceptance and rejection. Sankalpa, vikalpa. I want this, I don't want that. Then what is the mind? A thing that contains apathy and sympathy for the external world. That is the mind. We have to trace within us what that thing is. It is within us, and one has to enter into his own self and try to have some personal experience of what the mind is. Then by internal analysis, one can try to come directly in touch with the faculty of judgment, reason, intelligence. By asking, what is intelligence? Where is it within me? We should try to find out that out and come in touch with that directly. We should inquire, what is the mind? It is already within me, but what is it? And what is reason within me? What is the source of the mind and intelligence? and crossing the stage of the decisive faculty, what is a soul? We must try, as a yogi does, to come in direct touch with the elements within us. Mind and intelligence are within each of us. Why should we not be able to trace out exactly what they are, to see internally what they are? So, just like we are having so many instruments, microscope and telescope and a nuclear magnetic resonance, NMR, they call that, you know, all these different things that the, you know, you hear from the medical profession, all different instruments to test what is inside the body or what is inside the brain. Like that, so many instruments are used to detect some different finer elements of the material world. Well, in India, the system of yoga is given. What is that for? To improve the detection device, the internal detection device that we have. The internal ability to detect what is a mind, what is intelligence, what is soul. That is the process of yoga. Yoga means the process of perfecting the internal instruments so that we can focus, so that we can concentrate, because these things, to understand what is mind, intelligence, ego, all those things, requires great focus, attention. Fine ability to know those things will be required. A refinement of mind, not just an ordinary mind can understand those things. Just like the ordinary eye can see what the microscope can see. So the ordinary mind can't understand what is this mind, intelligence, ego, all those things, reason. Therefore, practice, refinement, and attention, focus, all those things have to be developed. And the yoga system is meant for that. And therefore, there are so many rules and regulations one has to follow. And very carefully also, breathing and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You can't understand the mind, then you try to understand at least the breath. How to control the breath, how to understand what the breath is doing. Breath is a little bit more gross than the mind. Breath is also very difficult to detect. Generally, people are breathing, they don't know what they're doing. Right? When you're breathing, you don't think about how you're doing it, how it is working, and so forth and so on. And yet, a breath is a gross thing, air, compared to mind. Well, yogis start with that a lot, right? Start with your breath. If you can focus on that, fix your attention on that, then maybe you can come to the next stage. Understand something finer. So this is the system of yoga. How to improve the internal instruments. So this way you can understand what are those internal things, the finer things. Then Dr. Murphy, when our faith is growing in a particular direction, how can we know that our realizations are coming from our own internal self, from our inner consciousness, and not from the influence of the environment, the circumstances that surround us? The self is in a dormant state, but by some external help it may be reawakened. Just as when one is sleeping, by external inference, a man can be aroused. It is something like that. Someone is dormant, but when, by external help, he awakes from his slumber, he again becomes aware of himself. Once he is awakened and his self-awareness has returned, he immediately knows, I was such and such, I am such and such. By the help of our friends, we may recover our health. In the same way, if we continue to apply the process of bhakti, we shall become more and more conscious of ourself and of reality. We are our own guarantee. Dr. Murphy, I wanted to clarify one point. In Kapila's system of analysis, Sankhya, he says that pradhan is that unmanifested matter which is eternal. You say that everything is consciousness. Is pradhan also composed of consciousness? Yes. What is material is only the misconception which is the cause of all this material existence, but it also has personality, Devi, the goddess. The world begins within misconception. When you have the proper conception, then you can read Krishna, Leela, everywhere. everything will excite you about Vrindavan. You won't see the outward thing if you are relieved from misconception. A madman has a maladjusted brain. He may be in the midst of friends, but he has lost in his madness, his paranoia. When he goes back to his normal position, he finds the same thing, all friends. In the same way, everything is all right. Only the disease, our misconception, needs to be removed. The disease is our lack of Krishna consciousness. Shri Maharaj, lack of consciousness means misconception, disease. This is described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Vayam dvitiya vinivaveshitasya. The disease is separate interest. The deviation from our normal spiritual condition, the development of misconception, is based on the charm, the prospect of separate interest. That is the root cause of all misunderstanding. The conception of local, provincial interest has caused the difference between a proper conception of reality and misconception. We have gone away from the central conception. From universal consciousness, we have come to this provincial plane. And according to the gradation of consciousness in this development from provincial to universal, we may find ourselves in so many different planets or planes of existence. Bhur, Bhuva, Svai, Janat, Mahar, Tapa, Satya. All these different stages of development are involved in this process of provincialism and universalism. But loss of consciousness of the center is the root of this entire material existence. One who is conscious of the organic whole, on the other hand, is in the most healthy position. That is proper adjustment. The maladjustment is the cause of our present disease condition. Adjustment is life. It is liberated life. And to be the prey of maladjustment is to approach pain and misery. Everything within the environment is all right. The only difficulty is found in the conception of selfish special interests. Our aversion to the universal interest is the cause of our detachment from the conception of the whole and from happiness and health. We have been deprived of happiness of our healthy position, and the cause is selfish interest. The absolute autocrat is absolute good. So there is no room for complaint against him. Krishna says, Siddham Sarvabhutanam. He is the owner of everything. In comparison, we are nothing, but still, he is our friend. We should not forget that we are represented in him. Our detachment from him is the cause of all miseries that we are suffering. We and others like us have lost faith in him, but he is our friend. We are jealous of him and we are thinking, I am not the master. Someone else is the master. This is intolerable. No taxation, no representation. But our interests are well represented in Krishna. He cares about us even more than we can conceive. Why do we forget that? If we only reinstate ourselves in that faith, we will be all right. It is our fault that we are suffering. Otherwise, there is no difference in vision from the universal standpoint. Ishad apitasya. We have turned away from our master. But we should remember that he is our master. He is our well-wisher. He is our guardian. Deviation from that consciousness is misery of an infinite magnitude. Its cause is very subtle and very minute. It is our mentality of separate interest. And as a result, we have been captured by the enemy camp. Let me see. Would someone else like to read? Try to go. Would you like to read? Or anyone?
I'll read Manashi.
Okay.
Thank you, Manashi.
Patanjali.
Patanjali. Manashi, is it the yoga system or something? Patanjali?
Yes, Patanjali is the yoga system. Patanjali is the author.
Okay.
The yoga system.
Patanjali has said we are moving towards evil in an intelligent and organized way. This is not only mad, but it is worse than mad, according to Patanjali. What will be the relief of a soul in such a deplorable condition? A madman is in possession of everything. He is only out of his mind. His consciousness has to be adjusted properly. Then he will find, oh, everything is all right. Let me go back home. At present, his consciousness is cast aside. He is not at home. His consciousness must be pushed homeward. This is the problem, Guru Maharaj used to say. I don't admit any famine in the world, only that of lack of Krishna consciousness. Jagate Ekanam Mantra Hari Kata Druviksa Chadhara Kona Druviksa Nai. Whenever he became excited, he used to use this expression. He would say, from door to door, tell everyone, Krishna is supreme. You are all servants of Krishna. Remind everyone of this from door to door. Then they will find, oh, I have everything I need. I am Krishna Dasa, servant of Krishna. I must connect with Krishna. That link must be supplied and then everything will be alright. There is no dearth of anything else. There is no real mystery, except that we have forgotten Krishna, our Lord. That is the only point we must push. This is the universal necessity. I don't admit any necessity besides this. Within this world, there is always a fire burning, but there is no necessity for extinguishing the fire, because we have nothing to do with the world that will be burned into ashes by the fire. All our inner demands can be met only in connection with Krishna. All other things are unnecessary. They may be burned into ashes or devoured by flood. We have no real concern with any of those things. Rather, those material attachments are dragging us back towards the wrong thing. And as a result, we can't allow our mind to be attracted to Krishna. The things of this world or attachments are all negative. These things are all burning. The whole universe will be burned to ashes, but we will not be affected in any way. The world may be devastated. The earth, the sun, the moon, the stars, everything may vanish. But still we remain. The soul is eternal. And if we can have a connection with Krishna, the things of this world are all unnecessary for us and for everyone else. Why should we come to live in the mortal world, erroneously identifying ourselves with flesh and blood? We only think that we are being born and dying, but it is a false notion. Everything is conscious, and we realize it fully. Everything is conscious, and when we realize it fully, we shall be fixed in the Swarupa Shakti domain, in the spiritual world. There, the different living beings may pose as matter, as the Yamuna, as water, as creepers, as trees, but they are all conscious units, simply posing in different ways. Dr. Morphy. It is said that when Krishna goes to take bath in the Yamuna, all the waves rush to embrace him. Srila Sridhar Maharaj. Sometimes the stones melt freely, the imprint of Krishna's lotus feet. Everything is conscious. So it is also in the case of Rahu and Ketu and other planets. Everywhere in the scriptures, the spiritually developed sages are found talking with nature as if they are talking with a person. And it is clear. But our consciousness is deviated in ignorance. So as scientists, you must crush the philosophy of fossilism. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj has ordered you to take a strong position in the scientific community in the West and crush fossilism. Why should we accept fossilism?
Do you know what fossilism means?
Imagine would be Maharaj. We were dealing with the
Do you know what fossilism?
No, Maharaj.
Fossilism is that Darwin's theory that Darwin people, they study the fossils, and according to them, from these fossil remains, everything is common. So they call it fossilism. He's calling it fossilism because the Darwinians think by studying these fossils, they are the original source of the life of all the variety that we see in the world today.
First, there is consciousness. This is Berkeley's theory. Not that mind is in the world, but world is in the mind. Everything is based on consciousness. No conception. Nothing remains without consciousness. So ultimately, all the desirable things are only a mental concoction. Actually, I wanted to ask something.
What's that?
Okay, does skin ever soul exist without
No.
Or is it always an association?
Yes.
Okay.
It's like we have no independent existence. That means nothing can exist independently of Krishna. If that were possible, then Krishna cannot be the absolute truth. Absolute truth. Nothing can be truthful without that. Outside of that. If there is some competitor to God, then he is not God. In other words, if there is some existence that does not depend on God, then that becomes a competitor of God. And then God is not God. Because time means only one. If there are two things that are independent of one another, then we don't have any conception of God here. Because they're both equal fighting one another. Then who is the supreme? What can it decide? Nothing is supreme. A living entity is dependent. Just like the sunshine. Sunshine and sun glow, they seem like two different things, and they are two different things. When the sunshine is in your room, there's not the sun globe is in your room. And so the sunshine and the sun globe are two different things. Yet, the sunshine depends upon the sun globe in order to be. Without the sun globe, there can't be any sunshine. Right? But if you cover the sun globe with a cloud or something like that, then the sunshine doesn't come. So sunshine depends on the sun globe, but the sun globe doesn't depend on the sunshine.
So Maharaji, when we were jealous of him, that's how we have acquired this position, this material position. So in a similar way, will the soul also be like attached to him in this manner? Does the soul also gets attached because of jealousy or something like that?
Soul becomes attached to Krishna by love. He just has to remove the misconception of being separate, being independent. Now when he removes this conception that I am separate, that I am independent from God, that I don't have to serve God, then he comes to understand his real position, his connection with God. We're always connected, but we are thinking we're not connected. Actually, we're always serving God. All living entities. No one can move without the will. Not even a blade of grass can move without the will of God. Or just like if you move your finger, how do you move your finger? Can you tell how you move your finger? You can scratch your head, but how did you do that? How did you pick up your arm and move your finger? What's going on? And you are digesting your food, but how are you doing that? And all these things are going on by some power beyond ourselves. We were born. How did we get here? How we were born? Why we were born? All those things we don't know. So things are going on without our knowledge. And that is Krishna arranging everything. It's not happening by accident. So although we don't know it, and we forget it. Actually, we forget that someone is arranging everything for us. But we completely ignore that, completely forget that, and we go on our life as if we are independent. And that's maya. That's illusion. Really, we are servants of God. We are connected with Him. But due to forgetfulness of that fact, and because of lack of showing attention, any focus on what is what, or lack of good knowledge, then we think of ourselves independent. That's called misconception. Factually, the fact is we are in direct connection with Krishna all the time. We're completely dependent on Him. But due to misconception, we are thinking otherwise. So this is the thing that has to be done, is to get pretty good education on what is what. It's called spiritual education, knowledge of the absolute truth. And don't be fooled by all this other education, thinking that you are learning something so important. When the most important knowledge is given here in the Bhagavad Gita and the scriptures and the instructions of the devotees. Is that clear? Everything else is, like I said, the only mental concoction. Fill the mind with false knowledge, with forgetful knowledge, misconceived knowledge. Okay.
Shall I go ahead to with the reading?
Yes, the next chapter is a very important one.
The creation. Srila Sridhar Maharaj. The Manu Samhita begins describing the creation from this point. Asit idam tamo bhutam aparnitam
alakshanam apragyatam alakshanam
apragyatam alakshanam
apratarkyam avikyeyam parasputam iva sarvata prasutam iva sarvata tatha svayambhur bhagavan avyaktavyam Chayanira Mahabhutari Vittocha Padura Sin Tamonga Tamonga. Okay, go ahead.
For the creative moment, for creative moment began, the marginal potency of the Lord was in a state of equilibrium. Tatastha means equilibrium. Asil idam tamo bhutam. Everything was in darkness, fully enveloped by colors. Alakshanam means there was no philosophy of any estimation, no symptoms of reality existing by which any conjecture or inference about the nature of reality would have been possible. And it was apragyatam. Science has no capacity for investigating the nature of that state of existence. We can only say from here that it was completely immersed in dark sleep. Deep sleep. Analogy of deep sleep may give us some conception of what that of that period. Prasuptam Iva Sarvataha. Material existence was if in a sound sleep. At that time, movement began from within the spiritual plane and light came. Light was seen by the seers. That light was pre-existing, but at the night the seers received the vision to see light. They began to see. The first conception of this material world after light was water. The light revealed a substance like water. The primal light is compared with personality. The light means consciousness, and consciousness means personality. That light of personality gave birth to the onlookers, to the feelers of material existence, and then to an objective substance like water. That water is known as viraja or partial substance. What is known in Vaishnava vocabulary as brahmaloka, the consciousness, is represented by light, and viraja or partial substance is represented by water. The conscious world is represented by the light, and the first objective reality is represented as water. Then the seeds of consciousness are sown in the causal water, which is the shadow of that light. Although the actual element of water was created long after this, the first conception of matter is compared to water, because water is an accommodating moving solution. The Sanskrit word for water, apa, means of lower conception. In this way, the lower creation began. Then in connection with the seeds of consciousness and the primal water, the next production was known as Mahatattva, the energy of consciousness, represented by light mixed with water as a mass.
Is mixed with matter and as a mass, then it is known as the Mahatattva.
You said matter, like light and matter are related to each other.
Yeah. Something
like the Einstein formula equals to MC. Something related to that E equals to MC squared Maharaj.
E equals MC squared, maybe. Yes, it's true. M is mass and C is light. Very good.
When the mass of matter is infused with energy of light consciousness, that is known as Mahatattva. After further development, the entity was divided into many units of Ahankara, the element of ego. Mahato Ahankara. First there is Ahankara, mass ego, as whole. The element of conglomerate ego is called Mahatattva. As objective substance evolves by the influence of consciousness, it expresses itself in five main ingredients. That which can be seen, smelled, heard, tasted, and touched. These five elements are the primitive principles of material existence. And that fivefold principles evolved in three phases, sattva, raja, and tama, goodness, passion, and glorious, expressing itself as ether, sound, hearing, and the air. And the ear, air, mass, touch, and the skin, fire, color, vision, and the eye. Water, taste, the senses of taste, and the tongue, and aroma, the sense of smell, and the nose. There are 24 elements. The self, three sub-elements, prakriti, mahatattva, and ahankara, five gross elements, five sense objects, five sense gathering instruments. This way, the development of the material world has been described to have come down through a process of subtle to gross, from consciousness to matter. Again, when this material existence is withdrawn by superior will, the gross dissolves into the subtle, beginning with the most gross. Gradually, the whole of material existence becomes more and more subtle until it finally enters into the subtle expression of material existence known as prakriti, the subtle causal bodily substance.
Okay, that's subtle.
Subtle.
Yeah, subtle. Subtle. You don't pronounce the D. Subtle.
Be silent.
What?
Be silent.
Be silent. Is there anyone else like to read? Everyone's.
Can you?
What?
Should
you
enjoy
it?
What can I do?
Should I read, Maharaj? This card.
Yes, Guru.
Okay, Maharaj, thank you. In this way, the development of the material world has been described to have come down through a process.
No, you're on page 40.
40.
With the dissolution of material energy.
Oh, yeah. With the dissolution of material energy, the Atma or individual soul is absorbed in Brahman, the non-differentiated mass of consciousness. The position of the different kinds of spiritual energy has been described by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 15.16 as follows. Dvavimau purushau loke charaschakshara evacha charasarvani bhutani kutastho akshara uchyate uttama purushastva anya paramatmeti udharata yo lokatrayam avishya vivarti avyaya ishvara. There are two kinds of beings, the perfect and unchanging or infallible, and the fallible souls. The fallible souls reside in the material world and the infallible souls reside in the spiritual world. Krishna says, I exist transcending both fallible and infallible aspects of spiritual substance, kshara and akshara. So I am Purushottama, Vasudeva, Parambrahma, the absolute truth. Supreme Absolute Truth. Within me, the whole of my jurisdiction is also to be considered. Vaikuntha Loka, Goloka, the whole creation is represented by the name of Purushottama or Vasudeva. Then when one enters into that domain of Vasudeva, he can see so many demarcations, stages of reality, pastimes and transcendental dealings and activities. There he will find the perfected living beings busy in their dedicated life in the eternal world. The general conception of the spiritual world is Vaikuntha, wherein we find calculative dedication. Above that is a plane of spontaneous dedication. That realm is called Goloka. And there are many different kinds of pastimes there. In Goloka, all the various relationships with Godhead are represented in full. Shanta, passive, Dasya, servitude, Sakya, friendship, Vatsalya, parenthood, Madhura, conjugal. And the conjugal mellow can be subdivided into Swakiya, wedded love, and Parakiya, a paramour relationship. This is of course very elevated subject matter. Still we have to have some view of these things, since our fate is ultimately connected with such high things given to us by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and great acharyas like Bhakti Vinoda Thakura and described in scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. What is found in their teachings about Goloka is our prospect or aspiration. According to our devotional taste, we will develop, and our taste can also be improved by hearing from a higher source. The spirit of our selection may be improved when we are shown different ideas, different models of transcendental reality. And according to what attracts us most based upon our inner choice, we shall have to act. Question: what part do the individual souls play in the process of creation? Srila Sridhar Maharaj: I have described that at first a general conglomerate false ego, Ahankara, is created. This is called Shambhu. In Brahma Samhita, wherein it explains how the soul as a ray of consciousness mingles with material energy, consciousness and Prakriti. The most primitive conceptions of energy are categorically different. The conglomerate consciousness comes in contact with mass energy and they mingle together. A general ego evolves. That general ego gradually dissolves into innumerable egos. And the conglomerate consciousness distributes itself as individual units of consciousness absorbed in material energy. In this way, gradually the individual conditioned souls come down and are entangled within the material world. In a primitive state, when the individual souls are massed together as a common whole, the conglomerate false ego or Ahankara is known as Mahatattva. As it evolves, it differentiates into innumerable individual units. Just as an atom can be broken down into subatomic particles, electrons, protons, neutrons and so on, the conglomerate ego gradually breaks into its component individual egos, jiva souls. Maharaj, I have a small question. So here, if I understand properly, it is said that the consciousness first mixes with the material energy and then a state is created into which the descent of the souls come and then they are descent. So we are saying that consciousness is separate from a soul. I mean, it's like given to the soul to, or is it integral part of the soul, Maharaj? I couldn't understand this.
It is a symptom of the soul. Just like the sun, the symptom of the sun is the sunshine, the symptom of the soul is consciousness. Without the soul, there would be no. What is the source of consciousness? We find that to be the soul.
Okay, Maharaj.
Understand?
Yes, Maharaj. Just as an atom can be broken into, okay, their position
in a primitive
is
state.
In a primitive state, when the individual souls are massed together as a common whole, the conglomerate, false ego or Ahankara is known as Mahatattva. As it evolves, it differentiates into innumerable individual units. Just as an atom can be broken down into subatomic particles, electrons, protons, neutrons and so on. The conglomerate ego gradually breaks into its component individual egos, jiva souls. Their position is tatastha, marginal and undetectable. From that subtle undetectable plane of marginal energy, consciousness first develops into the detachable plane as a whole. And then innumerable individual spiritual units are manifest from that mass lump of ego or mahatattva. Gradually the other elements of creation develop within this negative plane of exploitation. This world is sometimes pushing forth and sometimes withdrawing, in the same way that the heart expands and contracts again and again. The whole universe expands and contracts, regrouping within the one and again manifest as the many. The one and the many, the evolution and the dissolution of the material universe takes place as a heart expands and contracts. The whole universe is manifest and withdrawn. The same characteristics that we find in the smallest unit can be traced in the biggest units. This is the suggestion by which we may know the whole more or less. There are also some categorically new elements to be added to our knowledge. In this way, those who are within this universe can have some partial knowledge. But those who are independent, outside the contracting and expanding world, who are impartial onlookers, can give the real history. That is the revealed truth, which is distributed in installments according to the capacity of the people of the time, place and circumstance. The revealed truth is found in varying degrees in the Bible, the Quran, the Vedas and the other scriptures of the world. Through this process, the truth is partially revealed in different places of the world. in proportion to the thinking and capacity of each particular group of people. The revealed truth is reliable, but still it is modified to fit the person to whom it is extended. For what reason we find differences in the different versions of the revealed truth? It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam that medicine may be hidden within candy to treat the ignorant. In the same way, the revealed truth may be hidden within the mundane consciousness of ordinary religion to help the ignorant class of men. Parokshavada Vedoyam. Still, Vedic revelation is conceived of by authorities as the most ancient as well as the most perfect of all versions of the revealed truth. The revealed truth as presented by Srimad Bhagavatam and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu must be considered full-fledged theism. There it is mentioned, what lies beyond this created world is the eternally dancing world. Here we are trapped in the world of contraction and expansion, but in the spiritual realm, everything is eternal, blissful dance. Still, even the reality there is of a lower and higher type according to the nature of rasa, transcendental mellow, anandam, ecstasy, which is the desired substance of every conscious unit. Question. Krishna's pastimes are eternal. When Krishna finishes one pastime in this universe, his pastimes begin in another. At the time of the final annihilation, when all the universes are withdrawn, how do Krishna's pastimes continue? Sridhar Maharaj, when the universe is destroyed in the total annihilation of all the stars and planets, the Mahapralaya, this side almost equates to zero. It reaches equilibrium, but the spiritual world is always in full swing. No harm can be done to Krishna's pastime because they have an eternal aspect. Question. But what happens to Krishna's Leela here on earth? Srila Sridhar Maharaj, suppose fruit falls from a tree. The fruit is gradually finished, but the tree remains. It is something like that. This material world may equate to zero, but Krishna's pastime continue eternally. Question. What is the difference between Goloka, Krishna's place of pastimes in the transcendental world, and Gokula, Krishna's pleasure abode in this earthly plane? Srila Sridhar Maharaj, Gokula Vrindavana exists, eternally exists, but sometimes the seers are all. Gokula Vrindavana eternally exists, but sometimes the seers are all absent. Gokula exists in the ideal world and is extended here. What we see from our different positions of existence. But Gokula is there always. If we have an eye to see something, it cannot be seen. If we have no eye to see something, it cannot be seen. If we have no hand to touch it, it cannot be touched. It is the same with Gokula. It is in such a plane where the different eternal processes which exert control over material energy cannot touch the fine ideal of existence in Gokula. If the earth vanishes, that does not mean that the whole solar system will vanish. The solar system may remain, but the men on the earth cannot see it any longer. Its influence on earth can no longer be felt. In the similar way, Gokula exists in another plane. It exists in the finest plane of reality. It is beyond this creation, beyond evolution and dissolution. Such subtle energy can be understood by analogy with ether. If earth is destroyed, ether may not be destroyed. Ether is within and outside earth. But with the dissolution of earth, ether may not dissolve, but continue to exist. The position of Gokula is something like that. This is confirmed by Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 9 and Text 35. Yatha mahanti bhutani bhuteshu cha vacheshu anu bhuteshu sucha vacheshu anu pravishthani apravishthani tatha teshuna teshvaham. O Brahma, please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I also exist within everything and at the same time I am outside everything. Krishna's position is similar. He is there and not there. Maharaj?
Okay, we can stop here. Yeah, we can stop here and ask if there's any questions. I'm just wondering. My understanding, I think they have written the wrong word here, Gokula, instead of Goloka. Goloka Vrindavan exists eternally. Gokula is the Vrindavan of this world.
Yes, sir.
So somehow the editors have put Goloka, Gokula, instead of Goloka. original question is, what is the difference between Goloka, which is place of worship in the transcendental world, and Gokula, which is place of abode in this earthly plane? And the answer is given, Gokula eternally exists, so there should be Goloka there. That's
actually,
maybe
it's
correct.
Actually, Maharaj, in Brahma Samhita, Sri Bhaktivinoda Thakur has mentioned that Gokula is a self-same, or rather Goloka is a self-same majestic manifestation of Gokula. So, I don't know, I mean, how this things are put here, Maharaj. That means what Bhakti Thakur is mentioning, in Gokul many pastimes are being manifested in this world. But sometimes we may not find the connections between two pastimes. But in Goloka, all the pastimes also exist and they are also interconnected. That means the interconnection can be found in the Goloka. But they may not be directly visible in Gokul.
I have some doubt about the text here, where it is said that at the time of annihilation, ether is not destroyed. As far as I know, that's not true, because the ether
is
not destroyed.
Where does it say that? I don't remember reading it. Where does it say that?
In the text.
Which page?
I was just hearing, I didn't call it.
No, I don't think you said that, boy. I think you misheard, because I don't remember seeing that. Did anybody remember hearing that? Or seeing that, reading that?
At the time of annihilation, Peter is not destroyed.
No.
The spiritual world remains always.
No, it doesn't say that, boy. It didn't say that. You misunderstood something.
What was the name of
No, that I don't
Ether was mentioned.
Not that it doesn't get destroyed. Otherwise, I would have also noticed that. Let me see.
Can somebody repeat it?
Oh, no, yes, it says, when the universe is destroyed in the total annihilation of all the stars and planets, the Mahapralaya, this side almost equals to zero. It reaches equilibrium. But the spiritual world is always in full swing. No harm can be done to Krishna's pastimes because they have an eternal aspect. The Mahapralaya is the greatest manifestation.
Ether was mentioned or not?
No, not mentioned.
Then it was a mispronunciation or something.
Maybe, or you misheard it.
Okay.
Of course, ether is also a material element, so how it cannot be destroyed.
Maharaj?
Yes?
Maharaj, I'm still in doubt with this element called ether, where we used to read it in the scientific text.
Maharaj, what you mentioned is...
I don't think the elements are destroyed, but the elements are transported.
But what you mean here, if Earth is destroyed, ether may not be destroyed.
Where does it say that?
In the page number 44.
From which page?
Page number 44, just about 5 lines above Yatha Mahanti Bhutani Yashloka.
Page 44.
Technology can be
understood
by technology being ether.
I don't see.
If Earth is destroyed, ether may not be destroyed, as you mentioned.
That's on page 44?
Yes.
And one more remark. Even the Earth is not destroyed.
I don't see. One minute. I don't see. Where is on page 44?
Yes, to Gokul Vrindavan, Maharaj. Which one? Yes, Maharaj is speaking about Gokul Vrindavan and this generally, the Kerala Kilodhaka. page 44.
It's a 45. Huh? Page number is 45.
45. If the earth vanishes, that does not mean that the whole solar system will vanish. The solar system may remain, but the men on earth cannot see it any longer. Is that the one?
It's influence on earth. Just below that, Maharaj.
In a similar way, Goku exists in another plane, exists in the finest plane of reality, beyond the creation, beyond evolution, the solar energy can be understood by an element of ether. With ether. If earth is destroyed, ether may not be destroyed. Ether is within and outside the earth, but within, but with the dissolution of the earth, ether may not dissolve, but continues to exist. All.
Well, even the earth is not destroyed, it is transformed. No elements are destroyed, but they are transformed back to Pradhan.
Yeah. So what are you saying
there is
here?
No destruction.
Yeah, what are you saying here is that it's not, this is not the Mahaprabhu. He's saying that some partial destruction may occur, because the earth is actually the product of the ether. It comes out from the ether. Ether is the most subtle of all the elements. And so he's trying to explain here that from the subtle, the gross comes. So even if the gross is destroyed, the subtle will still remain. Just like if you destroy the nose, your breath does not destroy it. Breath is still there. Nose may be, you know, broken, but the breath doesn't stop because the nose is broken. Like that. Breath is more subtle than the nose. In the same way, the ether is more subtle than the earth. So even the earth is destroyed, but doesn't mean that the ether is destroyed. Something like that is being explained. So he's trying to show that there's this difference between the gross and the subtle. And the Goloka is most subtle, most sublime. So even though this whole universe is destroyed, that Goloka still remains. Right? That's what he's trying to say here. That Goloka is something like that.
Can you explain in chemical way how from the most subtle Pradhan this element transforms into the most gross to the earth? What is the chemical explanation?
I wish I could explain. Well, how to explain how the subtle produces the gross is a very difficult subject. And it can't be explained in chemical terms.
Yeah,
chemical is the gross.
Yes,
but chemical is the gross, right? So how to explain the subtle from the gross? We can't do that. Gross has to be understood in terms of the subtle.
Okay, for example, from ether. Ether is already gross. Ether is made of atoms, material atoms. So how you would explain further?
No, ether is not made of atoms. Ether is like the room. Prabhupada calls it the room. For the material elements. So the room or the space for the material elements is more like space than like any element. It's a continuum. So it's not atomic by nature. Space is not atomic, it's continuous. And
some substance must be there.
Yes, but it's like space. Space is not, it's a substance, but it's not a substance also. It's an invisible substance. Space is a material element. But who can touch it? Who can see it? Who can measure it? Really? We don't measure it directly. We can only measure. We can only measure different points in there from different planets. What's that? So ether is also like that. It's like subtle, like space. Although it's part of the gross material world, but still it's not something that can be measured in the same way that Earth can be measured, or water. Or even fire.
Maharaj, at least within the gross world also, Maharaj, if we take an example, like let's say hydrogen, we cannot see hydrogen, and oxygen, we cannot see oxygen also. But when they react, then we get water, which we can observe. by our eyes.
So not only that, but hydrogen and oxygen, for instance, we can measure. Even we can see it, we can measure the weight of it. We can put it in a bottle and measure how much is in there by determining the weight. Right? You have an empty bottle and you weigh it. And you put some hydrogen in there and it will be heavier.
But ether is already a material element.
Ether is like the air inside the bottle. Huh? The emptiness, if you make a vacuum, that's inside that bottle.
It's a material element. It's a material element according to Krishna. There are eight material elements. So it's
but it's very
it must be the atom there.
No, not necessarily.
Just like hydrogen, it was a good idea.
Is space material or spiritual? Oh, what is space? Is it material or spiritual?
It is material.
Material. But is it atomic or continuous?
Must be atom.
Must be atom. Whoever told you, where did you ever see anyone mention about space being atomic? Oh, there's an atom of space, how big is it? How big is an atom of space? What is the width? How much space does an atom of space occupy? It makes no sense. Space is continuum. So ether is also like that, the continuum. But it's still material. We just have to take the problem and say space is the air. Ether is the space that makes room for the manifestation of the different forms of this world to appear in. So it's like space, according to Prabhupada's interpretation.
The room.
So Maharaj, even space is an ether?
No, space is not ether. Space is really a, what would you say, a mathematical construct.
But there is a problem, you see, if there is this Shakti Parinamavad, transformation of energy from one thing to another, then there has to be something, some substance.
Yeah, it doesn't say that necessarily the transformation has to be from one atom to another. It could be from a continuum to an atomic. How that happens? That's a problem, no doubt. A philosophical problem.
No, technical also.
Yes, and it can be
according to Vedanta.
Yes. From a philosophical level, it can be explained. Go ahead, Prabhu.
According to Vedanta Sutra Maharaj, this space also manifests from Brahman. Because the logic is that if the space was existing as an independent reality apart from Brahman, then this Janmadhyasthita will not be applicable. So since it is everything in Janmadhyasthita Jataha, so even space comes from the Brahman. So therefore,
the problem is this. In Sankhya philosophy, there is no word for space. Because space is not an element, actually. Space is a mathematical abstraction. It's a mathematical abstraction. That's all. So it's not really a tangible thing. Just like they talk about dimensions in mathematics. Dimensions, space, all these things. Even time. Well, time is not exactly a mathematical invention. Although it has, they try to represent it by mathematics, but still time is a very subtle thing also. Very subtle. Time is more of a process than a thing. That's why. It's an activity. It's the activity of destruction.
So what is the exact difference of the space and the ether?
So space is, I would say, space is a mathematical abstraction, whereas ether is the space, is a room for the activities of the other elements.
Not really mentioned in the Vedas, the space, but yeah.
Right? We don't find in Sankhya philosophy any word for space, only ether, air, like that. And space is connected with the sound. Anyhow.
Space, air is connected to the sound, I think.
No, ether. Air is connected with touch.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right. And space would be connected to
what?
Huh? What's that?
There is a word, Maharaj, in Sanskrit called Akash. Akash could, is also, you know,
unmanifest.
Unmanifest.
It's the unmanifest. Akash means, yeah, well, so you can say space, yes, is unmanifest because there's nothing there. You're talking about space, it means nothing. In that sense, space doesn't refer to anything. So it's Akash in that sense. But we can say, in the mathematical terms of science, it's an abstraction. A mathematical abstraction. To give it any kind of substantiality is a little bit, is not actually correct. We want to see everything, huh? We want to see everything in terms of tangible things, but space is not tangible like that, and more of a thought.
But, yeah, it is okay, let's say it is thought like you said, but there is a problem of, there is a statement of Srila Prabhupada that nothing does not exist, everywhere there is something. So
yes.
If there is something, then what is the space?
Yes.
Something must be. Something must be there.
Well, I mean, we call whatever we can see space, but it doesn't mean that there's not something there. And we say that what is there is consciousness, and somehow or other consciousness is creating this difference between things. And we call that space. But actually it's consciousness. Consciousness is the thing that is really there. But because we can't see consciousness, we call it space. So it depends how we are seeing things, what we are calling them. That's all. You can call it anything you want, but because you don't know what it is, then your name will also not be able to describe it properly. In order to understand the things properly, you have to understand what is the foundation upon which you're talking. What are the assumptions you're making? And so we begin with the idea that consciousness is foundational. Personality is foundational, and then everything is arising from that. Then how to trace that back from our misconception to the true conception, that we have to figure out. How to get rid of our misconceptions. Well, that's a difficult problem, no doubt. How to understand what is space. Scientists have a big problem with it. Even to understand what is mass, they have a big problem. Because these fundamental things are merely words that we can't have any further definition of. They begin with the assumption, you can say. They assume that there is space and there is mass.
My question would be now, to what dark energy could we compare? To ether or space?
They don't even know what the matter they can see is. What to speak of the matter they can't see? The dark matter.
That would be some subtle energy in the planet?
I have no idea, because they don't even tell us what matter is. They say they have some problem understanding dark matter, but what is real matter that we can see? What is that? What's that, Purushottam?
But whatever space may be, it has the connection with the Supreme Lord. So what is the connection?
Has what?
Like, for example,
has connection with what?
It has a connection with the space, whatever it may be, but it has a connection with the Supreme Lord. Like, for example, about the Dham is mentioned, like Krishna is son of Dasharatha. So Krishna is a person in the spiritual world, but then the Dham itself is an expansion of the Lord. Then the devotees are an expansion of the Supreme Lord in some way. So everything is connected to Supreme Lord. So then this space of spiritual world is also actually Supreme Lord himself. At least are in some connection to him. So the space that we observe in material world, that also must have a connection with the Supreme Lord. So what
I say the place of Vrindavan, spiritual abode, that it does not exist in space or time. And beyond that. That exists within the personality of Godhead himself, as part of his consciousness, and therefore as part of our reality. Just like Vrindavan is so many miles wide in this, and yet when we talk of Vrindavan, it's only a few miles wide, length and breadth and so forth, I don't remember, but it's only a few miles, and yet the whole of the creation exists within Vrindavan. Then what kind of space measurement are they talking about? How many miles? You see? Then when you come to analyze, what is a mile? Now, let's say you have to analyze miles in terms of how many centimeters there are in a mile. Then you come down to 1 centimeter. Now, what is 1 centimeter? Huh? Then you say, well, it's so many millimeters, 1,000 millimeters. And then what is a millimeter? See, how far do you want to go? Nanometers? Then what is a nanometer? Well, how big is a nanometer? Like that. You can't get down to the finest element of space. You can't tell what it is because you have to start somewhere in order to speak of space, you see? You have to start with something.
Yes.
Now, how big is a foot? How big is the meter, rather? You know how they determine the size of the meter? They have one stick, one golden rod in the Louvre in France. And that stick is the measure of the meter. They chose some stick, and that meter, that stick is the measure of how long the meter is all over the world. But who made that stick? Some man had to make that. That's not the absolute measure of space, because they made some stick. When you want to say what is space, at the most fundamental level, no one can say what it is, how big it is. Same thing with mass. No one can say what the element of mass is, how heavy it is. Because all are determined. They make some assumption, they make some axiomatic truth, and then from that axiom they determine so many other things. That's the relative way of doing things. For what space is, what matters, no one can say, absolutely. So we say it's consciousness, what you decide. Based on that, based on the will to measure. That's all.
Maharaj?
Yes?
Maharaj, so Prabhupada says that 3/4 is spiritual world and 1/4 is material world. So, but so ether has come from the spiritual world. So, in the spiritual world, is there anything like space? Ether? Is it there, Maharaj?
No. That is, like I said, that is the plane of consciousness, that is chit shakti. We have to understand that. That is all conscious stuff, all personality there. They may pose in different forms of rocks and trees and ground and things like that, but it is all personality, all consciousness. That is the measure of that reality. That is a true measure of it. Now that's transcendental knowledge. So you can't understand that in terms of measurement process. The measurement process can't go to that plane. Can't take your rulers there. And your slide rules. That won't work in that world. It's transcendental. There's a meaning. Maya means measure. But in that world, of course, there's yoga maya. But not the... you won't be able to understand that world in those terms. All personal. The measurement there is rasa. In terms of rasa. Alright. I think we've set it up today. Now continue next time. Where are we now? Left at page 46?
Yes, Maharaj.
44, Maharaj. Oh, 45.
Huh? What's that? 45? Okay. So next time we'll start from 45. Alright. Thank you very much, Bruce.
All right.
Glory to Srila Prabhupada. All glory.